O hat hasu si atlach tlislisa abt Adam. Atlchil atlma. Zakit chislathok kawashimsh. Good morning, everyone. The plan for today is to review some sounds, specifically the tongue tick sounds and the tongue back sounds. Talk about how to divide words into syllables when pronouncing them. Work on syllable conversation 6 through 10. And start learning about mood, what mood is and how to use it. We're going to start with these sounds, the tongue tip sounds, C, C wedge, S, S wedge, barred L, and barred lambda, and the tongue back sounds, K, round K, Q, round Q, X, round X, back round X. These are the example words that we typically use for the C's and S's, and you'll find these same words on your alphabet summary handout. Let's say these together. I'm going to pause the recording here because I don't think this needs to go into the recorded lecture. I want to share a trick for learning how to pronounce words that begin with ts, like tsapin and tsunami. English speakers find this difficult at first because English doesn't have any words like this. But we have no trouble saying words that have ts inside them or at the end, like dotson or cats. So the trick is, when you have a word like tsapin, pretend there's a vowel in front of it. Pretend the word is atsapin. And suddenly it becomes a lot easier to say. Atsapin. And then say that, but make the silent. Atsapin. That's the trick. That's how I learned to say words like this back when I started studying the first, second language with this sound to me, which was Japanese. I'm planning to talk in more detail about back H tomorrow when we talk about throat sounds, but I'm going to give a brief introduction to it now because we need the back H in order to pronounce some of our basic conversations. I'm looking at the alphabet summary handout. If you look at the table in 2, you'll see that the plain H and back H are at the right side of the table under the throat sounds. There are 4 sounds in the throat column. The 2 in the very last rightmost column are glottal stop and plain H. Just to the left of them are the pharyngeal stop and the pharyngeal H, or back H. The sounds in the right-hand column are glottal, that is, they're made at the glottis, which is the space between the vocal cords. In other words, they're laryngeal. Whereas the sounds in the left-hand column are pharyngeal, which means they're made in the pharynx, which is the bottom part of the throat, just above the vocal cords. The pharynx is not a place that most languages use to make the consonants, but Nuchanov does. You still have a tongue down here in the pharynx. The tongue is attached to the front of the throat, but it can still flex. The tongue is a very flexible organ. And if you flex your tongue to bring it towards the back of the throat and narrow the opening, it sounds like this. So what I'm doing is I'm constricting my throat by moving my tongue back. And that's basically a pharyngeal stop sound. It's a strangled sound. If I blow air through that opening, instead I'll make a pharyngeal H. I think it's kind of unfortunate that we write the back H with the letter H with a dot, because it's really not the same sound at all. And because English speakers have trouble saying the pharyngeal H, and because it looks like the H that they're used to, many English speakers simply do not pronounce the pharyngeal H. They pronounce it as if it were a plain H. But it isn't. It's a completely different sound. It's stronger, louder, and longer, and takes more effort. One trick that some people use to make the back H is say that this is the sound some people make when they blow on their glasses, and they go, I don't know if people actually make a pharyngeal H, but some people find that helpful. I think it's more helpful to understand how to do it, to be able to feel my own tongue and learn to control what I'm doing with my tongue. Once you learn to say the back H, it still takes a lot of effort to keep doing it. And for me, that was the hardest part long term, to learn to pronounce the back H. Like, I knew how to do it, but my English brain kept saying, really, I shouldn't have to work this hard to make a language sound. But you do. So, and I think we often find that when we learn a second language, right? Suddenly we have to work harder to move our mouths in ways we're not used to. And that's what you have to do with the back edge. We're now looking at conversations 6 and 7. And we're going to divide these into syllables. When I divide words into syllables, I use slashes, like so. It's common in English writing to use hyphens to separate syllables. But I never do that because I use hyphens to separate meaningful parts. It can take some people a while to recognize the difference between meaningful parts and syllables. Let me give you a simple example. In 7A, Chachimhehak, Chachimhe is a meaningful part, and Hak is a meaningful part. Chachimhe is a word meaning okay, Hak is a mood ending that says this is a question about you. I can use the hyphen to separate these two meaningful parts to make it clear that this part means this, and this part means this. If I were dividing these into syllables, it would be like this. Cha, chim, hey, huck. There are 4 syllables, 2 meaningful parts, and 4 syllables. So meaningful parts and syllables are not the same thing. This can be hard to see because often they overlap. Sometimes they completely overlap. In 6A, the meaningful parts are uh, uk, and huck. And the syllables are uh, uk, and huck. But compare that to 6B, where uh-atlah consists of the meaningful parts uh, ak, and ah, whereas the syllables are uh, a-tlah. We have a slight difference in the boundary between the meaningful parts, ak and ah, and the syllables uh and tlah. And if we didn't have different ways of marking meaningful parts and syllables, we wouldn't be able to indicate this in writing. It's very important that you understand this, either subconsciously or explicitly. Now, the rule for where to draw the syllable breaks is quite simple in Nunchaknal. Every Nunchaknal syllable begins with one consonant followed by one vowel. That is a universal, unbroken rule. So, in a word like chachim hei mah, the syllables are cha, chim, hey, mah. To find the syllables, it can help. One procedure to find the syllables is to look for the vowels, because every syllable is going to have a vowel at its center. Then find the consonant to the left of each vowel, and that will be the beginning of that syllable. Any consonants that are left over go at the ends of syllables. I've written out a couple more examples here just to help us practice finding syllable boundaries. The first word is yakwinkasatha, which it means the one I'm always with. It's like my friend or my buddy, my partner, yakwinkasatha. The other word is thitmaksti. Thitmaksti means mind or feelings. Let's start with yakwinkasatha. Yakwinkasatha. What is the first syllable in this word? We just broke the word yakwink kas atha into 5 syllables. Yakwink kas atha. Every single syllable starts with one consonant followed by one vowel. And for this, it's important to understand that even though we write long vowels with 2 letters, it's still just one sound. It's one vowel. For illustrative purposes, I'm also giving you the central pronunciation of this word, which is yakwinksath. So we just looked at a couple of interesting examples from Central Nunchaknal and DTDOT, which follow the same pattern but are different lects. Those words were yakwinksath in Central and hichksa in DTDOT. Next, I want to look at the word hitmaksti. Tlitmaqsti. This is the word that means mind or feelings. Where are the syllable breaks in Tlitmaqsti? So Eric correctly syllabified this word into Tlitmaqsti. The reason why I shared this example is because it has an ST cluster in it, and English really likes to keep S and T together. So take an English word like rhinestone. Most English speakers would tell you the syllables are rhinestone, not rhinestone. But Nechanoth is the opposite. Nechanoth strictly has only one consonant at the beginning of each syllable. Therefore, the syllables of Tlitmaqsti are Tlitmaqsti. And this is one of the subtle ways that our English accents often express themselves in Nechanoth, is that we want to syllabify S's and T's together. That's our English brain talking. Now we're ready to come back to our survival conversations. So I think most of you will have little trouble with chachim hehak, chachim hemah, except that you will have to force yourself to say a back H and not a plain H here. So this word is not chachim hehak. That would be a plain H. It's not chachim hehak. It's chachim hehak. Chachim hehak. And one of the ways to tell if you're doing it right is that when you pronounce a true back H in chachim he, the back H pulls the tongue down, right? Because it involves bunching up the muscle down here, which pulls the tongue out of the mouth, which deforms the short I. Short I usually sounds like I, as in himix, right? But that is a high front vowel. It requires the tongue being up here. When the back H pulls the tongue down, it deforms that vowel. So instead of I, it comes out more like I. Chachim he, chachim he. Conversation 6 will be a little more challenging, but it'll be easier if, one, you pronounce the back H's properly, two, you break words into syllables, and three, you pronounce the glottal stop. English has a glottal stop, and we'll be talking more about glottal stop tomorrow. The difficulty English speakers have with glottal stop is not saying it, because it's not hard to say. It sounds like, that's all it is. That's a glottal stop. The problem is that we never write it in English. So English speakers are used to ignoring it. But you can't ignore glottal stop in Nechanoth because it's meaningful. Often, whether there's a glottal stop or not can affect the meaning of a word. So let's pronounce these words by syllables. And I'm just going to stick with conversation 6 for now because it's the harder one. Oh, ak, hak. Ha, a, oh, a, tlah. I often say that it's much better to say words right than to say them fast. And I encourage people to start as slowly as they need to. So if you're having trouble saying oh, a, tlah, slow it down. Oh, a, tlah. Put pauses between the syllables if you like. Oh, a, tlah. The important thing is to get the sounds and the syllables right. Over time, it'll get easier and you'll naturally start speaking faster and more smoothly. But don't try to force yourself to speak fast at the beginning before you're ready to. We're about to quickly run through survival conversations 8 through 10, starting with 8A. U kokma. Anima u kok. Uyakta natu asua. Chu uyaklin. Uathuk iatha. U kwe i atha u athuk. I'm talking about sentence 9a, uyaktlah nachu athsuwa, which I found a lot of people have trouble remembering and understanding. And I think it comes down to the first word, uyaktlah, which is based on uyi. Uyi means at the time of. And it corresponds to English prepositions like at, on, in, but it's only used for times, right? So in English, we say like in 2023, on Tuesday, at 2 o'clock. So in English, we have a variety of prepositions that we use with times. In Nichanoth has only one, which is uyi. Uyi is the generic preposition that's used for times. So you can think of it as meaning at that time, if you like. Akt is future, and ah is a mood ending that we'll be learning about in just a few minutes. So altogether, this means at will I. And we could put a time in here. So like, if I'm going to see you at 2 p.m., I might say uyaktlah 2 p.m. nachua suwa. In your channel, I would say uyaktlah at ilchi nachua suwa. But if I don't specify the time, then it either refers to a contextual time, like we've already established the time we're talking about, or it just means later. And that's what it means here. If with no time specified, it means later. So my suggestion to those of you who have trouble learning this, which will probably be all of you, is to remember that it all comes down to uyi. If you understand what uyi means, you can understand the whole rest of the sentence. Before I let you loose to practice these with your partners, I'd like to cover a couple more things. One is pronouncing vowel length, and the other is mood endings. Once you understand these concepts, it'll be a lot easier to practice these conversations. In order to illustrate vowel length, I've selected just three longish words from these conversations. Those words are chichimhimah, uukokma, yukweiatla. How many syllables in these words? So these words include some long vowels and some short vowels. In Nuchanoth, we write the short vowels with one letter and we write long vowels with two vowel letters. Yesterday, I talked about the fact that long vowels in Nuchanoth really are long. They have twice the duration of short vowels. And English speakers sometimes find this hard to understand because of the way we learned English in school. In English class, it's common to refer to English long vowels, like I, oo, and a, as long. But really, the difference between long and short vowels in English, so-called long and short vowels, is quality. The difference between e and a in English is a difference of quality, not a difference of duration. Whereas the difference between e and e in Nuchanoth really is one of duration. So that's the first thing you have to let go. Second, even once you understand what you're supposed to do to pronounce long and short vowels, it can be quite challenging to do so because we're not used to doing that in English. English has no duration distinction in its vowels. So it's a new skill that you have to learn for Nuchanoth. Yesterday we were pronouncing some alphabet example words like himix and teach. Himix has two short i's, teach has one long i, and most of you did just fine pronouncing those words alone. But now we're trying to pronounce entire sentences, which consist of several vowels of various lengths, right? And even if you know how to do it, it can be difficult to do it. So I want to teach you a technique that I developed when I was learning DT-DOT, which I learned before I learned Nuchanoth. I knew how I was supposed to pronounce the vowels, but I was having trouble doing it, partly because it was already difficult to pronounce the consonants and vowels properly with the proper quality. I didn't have enough attention left over to pronounce the lengths properly. So what I learned to do was something I had learned to do when I studied music, which was to take out the vowels and consonants and just look at the rhythm. For example, if we look just at the rhythm of chachimhemah, it has four short syllables, cha, chim, he, mah, which I'm going to write big S, big S, big S, big S. U kokma has a long, long, short rhythm. What's the rhythm of yukweiatla? And the rhythm of yukweiatla is long, long, short, long, short. So that means that if we take the vowels and consonants out of yukweiatla, I can represent its rhythm abstractly like this: Long, long, short, long, short. Long, long, short, long, short. Once I nail the rhythm down, I put the vowels and consonants back in and say, you, kwe, I, asa. You, kwe, I, asa. So before I said that it was difficult for me to do both tasks at the same time, pronounce the consonants right and pronounce the durations right, because it was too much to focus on. But that's only one reason it's difficult. Another reason it's difficult is that English and Nunchaknold have different rules of rhythm. In English, syllables usually fall into a very, very strong weak rhythm. So in English, we really like one vowel to be stressed and the second vowel to be unstressed, unstressed and then unstressed, right? And if you look at long English words like Massachusetts, the it goes stressed, unstressed, strong, weak, strong, weak. Nunchaknold has its own rules of rhythm, but generally speaking, they're freer. Basically, in a long word, any vowel can be long or short with no preference as to the sequence of longs and shorts. So that is another reason why it can be challenging to pronounce Nunchaknold rhythm right, because we get interference from English rhythm. And this is another reason why taking the vowels and consonants out can help you get there, because when your English brain hears vowels and consonants, it thinks, language, I need to make this fit a language rhythm. But when you take the vowels and consonants out, it doesn't sound like language anymore. It's just music. And then we find it easier to focus on the rhythm abstractly. So let's do this with each one of these words. If I were having trouble saying chachim hemah, I might take the vowels and consonants out, and the rhythm would be short, 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 short. Short, 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 short. Now I put the sounds back in. Chachim hemah. Chachim hemah. The rhythm of u'u kokma is long, long, short, short. Long, long, short, short. And notice when I say the rhythm, I'm not just saying the words long, 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 and short. I'm making long, long, and I'm making short, short, right? Long, long, short, short. Long, long, short, short. U'u kokma. U'u kokma. Long, long, short, long, short. Long, long, short, long, short. Yu kwe I asa. Yu kwe I asa. As you go through and practice these conversations, you will notice, or your partner will point out to you, that you're not getting the vowel lengths properly. And that may be a good time for you to take a pause and run through this exercise. Take the word that you're having trouble saying right and identify just its rhythm. Nail its rhythm down, and then put the vowels and consonants back in. And gradually you will improve in your pronunciation of Nunchaknold rhythm. Now we're going to talk about mood. I'm excited to talk about mood because it is where a lot of the power of Nunchaknold grammar is kept. Mood is a fundamental category in the Nunchaknold sentence. Every sentence of Nunchaknold has to have a mood ending. And that mood ending does several things. It completes the sentence. It agrees with whoever the sentence is about. It tells us what kind of a sentence it is, for example, whether it's a statement, question, or command. It does more things as well, but let's start with those. I'm going to share the beginner's mood guide with you. So you'll find this on the curriculum page at kustoop.net. And we're going to be looking at the beginner's mood guide. There is also an expert mood guide once you master the beginner's mood guide. The beginner's mood guide is just 2 pages, but I've boiled down most of what a beginner needs to know about mood onto just these 2 pages. And I've done it for every single dialect. So there's a lot of information boiled down on this page. And some of it is memorization. Some of it is practice. Learning how to understand how mood works is the first challenge you have. Once you understand how mood works, you need to master all of the endings. So like I said, there are about 20 moods in the language. Each mood has roughly 6 endings. So that's more than 100 mood endings you have to learn in order to speak fluent Nunchaknold. But they do a lot of work. They do a lot of work in the language. So really, if you can't handle mood, you can't speak Nunchaknold. You can't even make a complete sentence. But if you master mood, you'll be able to say all kinds of things much more efficiently than you can say them in English because of all the kinds of things that Mood does. If you come out of this summer's course having mastered all of the moods on this handout, that will put you significantly forward in your fluency journey. And we have intermediate and advanced learners here who still have not mastered all of these moods. I believe there are 13 moods on this handout, 13 out of the 20, the 13 most important. And for you intermediate and advanced learners who have not mastered all of these, I'd like to issue that as a challenge. Recognize which of these moods you have not yet mastered and master them by August. Now we're going to take a beginner's view and start with the real mood. These are the six endings of the real mood. Let's pronounce them. Ma. Me it's. Ma. Min. Me tsu. Ma. Maybe I should say a little more first about how to read this chart. Because this chart has information on every dialect, you have to know how to find your dialect. The dialect that we're studying here is Barkly Sound Nuchonov, which will be marked with a B or an E. I have a report that you can read if you want to know all of the abbreviations I use to identify dialects, but really the only ones you need to know for now are N, B, and E. That's N for Nuchonov, B for Barkly Sound, and E for East Barkly Sound. If you look at the curriculum for Nuchonov page, you'll see that there are different columns for East and West Barkly Sound. That's because some of these resources are slightly different for the two dialects. But on the mood guides, there are no differences between East and West Barkly Sound. Therefore, they're both collected under B. So this means whenever you're looking for the information that you need for the dialect that you're studying, look first for N for Nuchonov, then look for B for Barkly Sound, then look for E for East Barkly Sound. So right now we're looking at the real mood in the Barkly Sound dialect. Now, just now when I pronounced these six endings, I pronounced the vowels with single dots after them as long. Ma, me, it's ma, and so on. Some of our friends, including Christine, have been practicing these a slightly different way in the Tshat language program. They usually pronounce these short when they're practicing them just as endings. The pronunciation of the vowel as long or short depends on the context, how long the word is that the ending appears in. The rule is after a one-syllable stem, the vowel is pronounced long. After longer stems, the vowel is pronounced short. So the brief rule that I use is short stem, long ending, long stem, short ending. These are endings that have to be pronounced on a word. They are never pronounced by themselves in natural language, but sometimes we do pronounce them by themselves when we're studying them, right, for technical purposes. So it's a little bit unnatural to decide what length to give these vowels, but I want to show you how the Tshat language program runs through them. Just to show you another method. So first of all, they point to indicate who they're talking about. Me, you, he, she, it, we, you all, or they. And they pronounce the vowels with single dots after them as short. So that looks and sounds like this. Ma. Me it's. Ma. Min. Me tsu. Ma'ath. Something else I've learned just through trial and error is that six endings all at once is too much for most people to learn. It's much better when learning a new mood to focus just on the first four endings. That is the ones that mean I, you, he, she, it, and we. For one thing, these are the ones we use the most. These are the four persons we most often refer to. I, you, he, she, it, or we. Second, it's less to memorize at once. Third, once you memorize these four, the other two are usually pretty easy. So let's run through just the first four endings of the real mood. Ma. Me'etz. Ma. Min. Now let's make some actual sentences. You've already learned the word chechemhe. Chechemhe means okay. So to say I'm okay, I'll say chechemhe mah. And that mah is doing a lot of work. Chechemhe is just a word, but chechemhe mah is a complete sentence. It's a complete one-word sentence. So the mah completes the sentence. It tells us that the sentence is a statement as opposed to a question. And it tells us that the subject of the sentence is I. Chechemhe mah, I'm okay. To say you're okay, I would say chechemhe me'etz. He or she is okay, chechemhe mah. We are okay, chechemhe min. We just practiced the real mood. The real mood is for making statements of fact when you know that what you're saying is true. And those four sentences we just made, chechemhemah, chechemhemeitz, chechemhemah, chechemhemin, are statements of fact. They would be understood as statements of fact because they end with real mood endings. The next mood we're going to learn is the question mood. And I'm only going to focus on the first four endings. By the end of today, I would like everyone in here to have mastered the first four endings of the real mood and the first four endings of the question mood. So here's one way to practice the first four endings of the question mood. Has. Hak. Ha. Hen. Let's try putting this on an actual word, like chechemhe. Chechemhe has. Am I okay? Chechemhe has. Chechemhe hak. Are you okay? Chechemhe hak. Chechemhe ha. Is he or she okay? Chechemhe hen. Are we okay? Those are questions. They're just like the real mood statements that we made a few minutes ago, except that they're questions. Otherwise, they're the same. I have one more mood to share with you, and that is the command mood. You'll notice that the command mood box looks different from that of the other moods. That's because the command mood has an interestingly different way of agreeing with the people that we're talking about. The most important, first of all, we don't issue commands to all six of the usual persons, right? Like, usually commands are to you. I'm telling you to do something. Sometimes I issue a command to us. I say, let's do something. But there's no such thing as a command to I, or to he, or to they in Nuchanal. Some languages can do that, but neither English nor Nuchanal does that. So the only persons that command endings agree with are you, you all, and we. Or you do it, you all do it, and let's do it. But they also can agree with objects, unlike the other moods. So most moods agree only with the subject of the sentence, that is the person who's doing the action. But command endings also agree with the object. So, for example, na'atah means listening. Na'atah-i is a command. I'm telling you to listen. Na'atah-i, listen. If I want you to listen to me, I'll say na'atah-is. Na'atah-is. So that ending is agreeing both with you, because you're the one who's supposed to do it, and it's agreeing with me, because I want you to do it to me. In other words, command mood endings agree with both a subject and an object, if there is one. Whereas all the other moods only agree with the subject. Eventually, we're going to learn all of the command mood endings, but for now, we're only going to worry about the very first one, the simplest one, which is I. I is the ending that I use to tell you to do something. You might find this a little hard to read because there's an exclamation point and a dot. Let me tell you briefly what those mean, and we'll practice these concepts in much more depth later. The exclamation point means that this is a hardening ending, which means that if the sound at the end of the stem that this ending is added to can glottalize, then it does. The dot after the I means that this is a weak long vowel. That means it follows the pattern I mentioned earlier, which is that it's long only after a one syllable stem, like wiki. Wik is one syllable long, so the ending has a long vowel, wiki. But compare that to na'atah'i. Na'atah is three syllables, so the vowel of the ending is short, na'atah'i. And all three of the moods that we've just covered, real, question, and command, they all have weak long vowels. They all follow this pattern. Not every mood does, but these three moods do. Now we're going to do a small exercise together, and then I'm going to set you loose to practice these conversations with your partners. The exercise is we're going to look at these 10 sentences, 6A through 10B, and identify every mood ending. Most of the endings of the real mood, including mah, me'etz, min, have weak m's, which are pronounced only after a vowel or a nasal consonant, but not after other consonants. And that is why there's no m in ohatlah. Ohatl ends in a lambda, so the m is not pronounced. Among these sentences, yuqua hakchechemhei is our first two-word sentence or two-word clause. And this shows that when there's more than one word in the clause, the mood ending goes after the first word, whatever it is. We can actually put these words in the opposite order. Instead of yuqua hakchechemhei, we could say chechemhei hak yuqua, which means the same thing. Are you okay too? So the words can go in either order, but the mood ending goes on whichever one is first. Yuqua hak chechemhe, chechemhe hak yuqua. This is going to take some time to get used to as well. So 10A, u'athok i'atha, is a little unexpected for our beginners because it's the first sentence we've looked at carefully that has a command ending in it. Second, it's the first one we've looked at where the mood ending is not the last thing in the word, right? And even advanced learners get used to this. The mood ending is usually the last thing in its word, but there are exactly three other endings that come after mood, and one of them is atha. Atha is the habitual ending. So u'athok i'atha doesn't just mean take care now, it means take care always. Habitually be all right. U'athok i'atha. The habitual ending comes after mood. Now, the reason we just went through this is because I found through experience that learners, English speaking learners, are really bad at first at recognizing the mood endings. And I think this is be partly because in English, we do not have rich agreement at the ends of words, right? Most of you have probably studied other languages that do have rich agreement at the ends of words, French or Spanish. Nunchaknor also has rich agreement. English has very poor agreement. There are almost no endings that agree with person in English. As a result, I think when English speakers hear a word and they identify the word, they think, I know what word this is. They stop listening and they don't hear the end of the word. And I see this all the time with beginners in Nunchaknor. They hear words are coming at them with different endings, and it's like they don't even hear those endings. They're not paying attention to them. So this is another thing I've learned through experience is that English speakers learning Nunchaknor as a second language have to learn to pay attention to endings. Endings in Nunchaknor are very informative. Often the ending is more important than the beginning of the word, meaning-wise. So that's one of the things that you guys need to practice and get good at is listening to the ending at the end of the word. So we just did this little exercise because I wanted you to find out how to identify the mood ending and make sure that you know what meaning it's conveying. And you'll want to do this, continue doing this as beginners until it becomes second nature, and then you won't have to force yourself to do it anymore. The sounds, the letters of the alphabet that we're focusing on today are the tongue tip sounds, which include C's, S's, and L's, and tongue back sounds, which includes K's, Q's, and X's. Let's start with the tongue tip sounds. You all know how to pronounce S, S wedge, and C wedge because these sounds are used in English. sa, sha, and cha. The letter C in Nutshanath represents the ts sound, which is a TS sound, which English speakers also have no trouble pronouncing except at the beginnings of words. And I talked a little bit about how to train yourself to do that, how to say, for example, tsap and tsunami. Let's talk about L's now. Nutshanath has two L's, which we call the barred L and the barred lambda. The barred L is a spirant L. This means that it involves constant airflow, which makes a hissing sound. And it sounds like this. The barred lambda is a plosive L. That means that it has a brief moment of silence where there's no airflow, followed by a release. Another way to put it is that it starts like a T and ends like a barred L. It sounds like kla, kla. Our example word for barred lambda is klama, klama, which is a house post. Our example word for barred L is hlutsma, hlutsma, which is a woman. The English L sound is a resonant L. And something interesting is that that square, that cell in this table is empty. So if we put the English L in this chart, it would go in the third column and the fourth row. That is the same column as barred lambda and barred L, but and the same row as M, N, Y, and W. That's because the English L is a resonant L. It involves voice. It's singable. So between these three possible L's, plosive L, spirant L, and resonant L, English has only the resonant L, and Nutshanath has only the plosive and spirant L's. That's what I meant earlier when I said that the L sounds of Nutshanath and English are complementary. English only has a resonant L, Nutshanath only has plosive and spirant L's. But I think understanding this can help you understand how to pronounce barred lambda and barred L better. A lot of people learn how to pronounce one or the other, and then never learn the other one. And I'd like you not to stop at learning just one and learn both. And it might help to understand the difference between a plosive and a spirant. A plosive has a moment of silence followed by a release, kla, kla. A spirant has continuous hissing sound. And both of those sounds are made in with exactly the same tongue position as the English L. The only difference between kla, kla, and la is that la is a resonant, kla is a spirant, kla is a plosive. So that is a overview of L sounds in Nutshanath and English. Now let's talk about the tongue back sounds. These are K, Q, X, and back X. And of these four sounds, only K is also found in English. But you can use that to help you find the other sounds. Q is the same as K, but further back. They're both plosives. They're both made with the back of the tongue. Just the Q is a little further back. So KKK sounds like that. Ka ka ka, that's a Q sound. Ka ka ka. Our example words are kook for K, kook, kawi for Q, kawi. And as I said yesterday, you will probably find as an English speaker that you can't hear the difference reliably between K and Q, but you can reliably pronounce the difference. If you know how to do it, nothing should stop you from pronouncing these properly. But it takes years to develop the ability to hear them, to distinguish them by ear. X, front X, and back X are simply the spirant versions of K and Q. If a K sounds like ka, 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 front X sounds like ha, ha, ha. So I'm making frication at the same position as a K, and I'm not stopping the airflow. K involves a brief moment of silence because it's a plosive, whereas ha involves continuous airflow. So X kh, is simply the spirant version of K. Back X is the same as front X, just further back. Front X sounds like kh, back X sounds like kh. Let's practice the example words just for the L sounds and the tongue back sounds. We're going to say these together, and then we're going to go around and I'm going to listen to each one of you say them, and I will give you feedback. Hlutsma. Klammer. Kook. Quistoop. Kawi. Quini. Chaumen. Hwakak. Chachashkuk. Mohoshkin.